Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we talk about, well, a little bit about injuries. It might be an old injury that you just can't seem to recover from. I've got one of those. Or there's a new twinge that's made an appearance. I don't have any of those right now. But, you know, you may be dealing with some aches and pains, and it can be hard to know what's just an annoyance that will eventually go away and what injuries need medical attention. Well, Bill Boisenault and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum are here to share what they know and give us the benefit of their experiences dealing with these kinds of things. Bill is an associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic.
Yes.
Bill, good to have you back.
Thank you, Larry. Great to be here as always.
And Jill, great to have you back. Jill's an assistant professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison.
That's right.
She's also a staff physical therapist for UW Athletics and Badger Sports Medicine. Great to have you back.
Great to be here.
And you came in. Neither one of you look like you have any aches and pains.
Feeling pretty good. But I haven't.
You have old aches and pains or new twinges?
There may be an old one in there somewhere.
There is, yes.
I have a pile of yard work that I'm looking at and haven't done anything about, though.
That's painful.
That's painful to look at, and I think it would be even more painful if I tried to tackle it all in one day.
Yeah.
I was watching my neighbor with his leaves, and he has a leaf blower.
Yeah.
He just blows them around.
I think that's a great idea. It sure beats all that raking. It's a good strategy.
Yeah, we're planning on heading up north this weekend, and I know there's just a blanket of leaves waiting for us, as there's every year at this time. And it probably would take me 3 hours to complete it without rest. And, of course, if I practice what I preached, I would do it for 30 minutes and then go do something else and come back another 30 minutes, which would help make sure I don't develop blisters, for one, for starting, and to take care of my back. But once you get going, you hate to stop because you want to finish. But
And when you're up there for a short amount of time, you know, you can't spread it out that much. So you kind of want to get the job done. So you do have a hard time practicing what you preach.
Yeah. Well, our family was in Door County this last weekend, and it rained the whole weekend. But, you know, everybody needs the rain. So we were not sad, but the colors in Door County were just absolutely gorgeous.
That's great.
The fall colors were just great.
Yeah,
I'd go back up again this weekend if I could. Yeah. It was a fun weekend, not spent in exactly the way we had planned to spend. There was no chance to. I mean, we did a little bit of hiking, but there wasn't much opportunity to really spend a lot of time outside.
Lots of indoor activities.
Indoor weekend.
Yeah. Bob in Minocqua, though, is a guy that gets out and around. I think Bob. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a 73-year-old runner that runs 3 days a week, and for the past 13 years, I train each summer to run a half marathon in the fall. And this year, as I got about 4 weeks out from it, I developed some hamstring stress. And as a dumb runner, I thought, well, I'll run through it. Well, that didn't work. I went for a 10-mile run, and after 6 miles, I had to walk. So I've been able to walk for about the last 8 weeks, but I haven't been able to run. My question is, how soon can I start rehabbing my hamstring? Do I have to wait till I'm completely pain-free, or should I start while I still have some discomfort?
What do you think, Bill?
Well, it's definitely time to start, and it's what's critical is how you define rehab. Mm-hmm. You're probably not ready to run yet, but in terms of potentially stretching hamstrings, working on your core, strengthening and stretching around the hips other than your hamstring, you're definitely ready for that if you haven't been doing that. The fact that you're walking, it sounds relatively pain-free, is a good thing, and so you can continue that, increasing distance and speed. But it is time to start working on strengthening and potentially stretching as well. Bob, can I ask, is it one hamstring or both hamstrings?
Mainly it's my right hamstring up near my buttocks, that big there, and the other one is slightly sore, but not as bad.
Okay. And any symptoms down below the knees at all, or is it all in the hamstring area?
All in the hamstring area.
Okay. All right. Are you doing any stretching or strengthening right now?
Not really. I haven't started to stretch at all. I'm sure that's my major problem. I haven't stretched much through my running career, and I've been at it for a long time.
Okay. Well, if you're going to stretch, it'd probably be better to stretch after you're walking anyways, after you get warmed up, and then do some gentle stretching of the hamstrings and then muscle groups up around the hip. But doing some core strengthening would also be very good for you. Is your race still coming up?
No, I couldn't run. It went by a month ago.
Okay, so you missed that already. Have you seen a physical therapist in the past for this?
I had some other problems, and I saw a physical therapist, and I asked some advice, and he gave me some ideas, but that's the extent of it.
Okay.
I think seeing a physical therapist would be a great strategy for you, Bob, and part of the reason I say that is because the rate of recurring hamstring injuries is really high.
Oh.
So many people don't adequately rehab these, and then they go back and they have this nagging, prolonged injury. So a good formal rehab program, like Bill said, addressing those issues, I think would be great for you so you don't have this problem again. It's really important.
Yeah, and Bobby, you find a sports medicine or an orthopedic physical therapist who works with runners. Mm-hmm. They not only can they look at your strength and flexibility, but look at your running style. Sometimes just some relatively minor modifications in how you run or stride length can make a big difference for recovery and prevention both.
There you go. Good luck.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Bob, for calling. Appreciate it. Okay, well, you know, when I'm 73...
I would love to be a 73-year-old runner. I mean, kudos to him.
Yeah,
that's
no
fantastic.
Kidding. Planning for a half marathon?
That's
excellent. Tony in Hales Corners, what's on your mind?
Good morning. I have an ankle that's been bothering me for about 2 months now. Not enough to slow me down. I'm pretty active physically. I walk 2 miles 4 times a day. I go to the Y. I spin cycle once there, and other days I use the treadmill and walk and run on it, and also do the stationary weights. So mm-hmm. I've been able to do all that stuff, but my ankle still is bothersome.
Okay.
And, Tony, did you have anything that you did a couple months ago that started this problem? Can you remember a twist or a slip, anything like that?
Not a bit. I should tell you that the pain is mostly in that large inner bone of the ankle.
That large inner bone of the ankle, down the kind of the bone on the side?
Yeah.
The one that sticks out.
Okay.
Yes, it sticks out.
Yeah, okay.
All right. And you said it doesn't bother you when you walk, when you cycle, anything like that? Doesn't it get any worse?
It bothers me, but not enough to slow me down, especially if I'm standing up on the cycle pedals.
Okay.
It's just more of an aggravation than anything else.
Okay. All right. And is it more at that bone, or do you feel like it's kind of the muscles around that area?
A little bit around, but mostly the bone.
Okay. Well, there's some muscles that go right around there that I'm wondering if you have a little bit of a tendonitis or overuse type condition that you got. It's especially since you can't remember a mechanism of injury. That would be kind of what I would be thinking about. And it's not getting better. It doesn't sound like it's getting worse, but it's not getting better. So it sounds
today,
to me...
Excuse me. Today, because I called you, it's slightly better.
Of course it is. You're
welcome.
Of course. but that tells me that you should probably see somebody for it. Depending on where you live in Hales Corners. That's close to Milwaukee, right, Bill?
Correct.
I'm looking at Bill.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you could go to a physical therapist and have you seen a PT in the past for anything, Tony?
Oh, a while ago, yes.
Okay. So if there's a clinic, you know, an outpatient orthopedic clinic kind of close to where you live, you could make an appointment and be seen there and see what they would recommend. By state law in Wisconsin, you can go to a physical therapist and see a physical therapist without having seen a physician beforehand. However, depending on your insurance may not pay for that appointment. So that's something you probably want to check into to see if you need to see your physician first before you go see the PT.
Yeah.
There you go.
And Tony, when you go in, bring your running shoes, exercise shoes in with you. And should mention that to Bob, our first caller as well, because they'll examine you with your shoes on and off. And sometimes patterns of wear in the bottom of shoes can give the clinician some good clues as to what may need to be changed.
Right. Good points.
But the fact that you're cross training, you're doing lots of different things. is really good strategy. I heard weight training. I heard all sorts of different cardiovascular activity and all those things. That's a really good strategy, Tony, and I'd encourage you to keep doing that.
And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call very much. By the way, you can join in, too, as we talk with Bill Boisenault and Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum about aches and pains and sprains and strains and how to deal with all of them. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mailer Show. I have an email from Josh wondering any advice on recovering core strength after a C-section birth. Jill?
Oh, yes. Boy, this is a really kind of, I want to say, hot topic, or finally coming to the forefront topic. Is we're seeing lots and lots of women postpartum. And by postpartum, we mean even 6 months, a year, 18 months after having delivered a baby, vaginally or through a C-section, who have such decreased core strength because all those muscles get stretched out while you're pregnant. And we're seeing it manifest not only as low back pain, but hip pain, knee pain, because people are so unstable in their core. Because this person had a C-section and they've had, you know, a surgical incision there through those muscles, this person would benefit from seeing a physical therapist to teach them how to train those core muscles, to recruit the muscles appropriately. It'd be something really important for this person before they get back to activity.
So, and that, you know, that kind of depends on the person. So you probably, general advice may not work.
General advice probably won't work so much, because this isn't the type of exercise where we want you to do a lot of sit-ups or something like that. There are deep, deep muscles that we want you to recruit appropriately. And a lot of times that takes a lot of biofeedback or feedback from the physical therapist one-on-one to make sure you're recruiting the right muscles.
Yeah, that's what I've seen. People coming in, so I've been working my core, and the only thing they've been doing is full sit-ups.
Right.
And that's really not going to get at the muscles that you want effectively. And people need to start at different levels with their core strengthening program.
Okay.
And so, you know, a visit or two with a physical therapist can get them started and teach them how to progress the program.
Right. But somebody, like, that's a perfect candidate for somebody to see a physical therapist a couple times. They've had this baby. They've had, you know, an abdominal incision, and they would benefit from PT.
Yeah.
Mary Lou in Monroe. On to you now. Hi, Mary Lou.
Oh, good morning. Aches and pains. What a topic.
Yeah. Have you got one?
Oh, I've got them in all different kinds of places. I had to pick which one to call about today. I'm 56 years old, and sometime in the past, oh, maybe 5, 6, 7 years, I must have really torn my rotator cuff. I can't identify when I did it, maybe walking the dog and he jerked my arm.
Don't do that.
As he was running. Yeah, or else in the course of my business, it's very physical and I may have pulled something down. Anyway, it's come back twice over the past 5, 6, 7 years to haunt me. Most recently, this past spring, all of a sudden, through nothing that I know happened, all of a sudden one day I woke up and it was sore. So sore that I couldn't reach up, I couldn't move, I could hardly get clothes on and off. It took me all summer until about right now to get to the point where I feel that I can use my arm and my right arm and shoulder again. I guess my concern is, now that it seems to be working again, what exercises can I do to strengthen it so it doesn't come back to haunt me, and what should I do not to aggravate it in the future?
Okay.
Those are all excellent questions. And, you know, you can tear your rotator cuff without a big episode, so that's not uncommon. About 50% of people age 70 or over have a rotator cuff tear, whether they know it or not. So it's highly possible that you tore your rotator cuff, Mary Lou. What you need to do is, I would strongly encourage you to see a physical therapist, because you need to strengthen muscles around your shoulder that weren't affected by the rotator cuff tear or weren't affected by the injury. And then they need to teach you, based on what you said, you said your job was very demanding, based on your job, lifting strategies, et cetera, so you don't get injured again.
Yeah. Okay, then how would I go about finding a PT clinic, or I'm not familiar with accessing that?
So you're in Monroe.
There's the Monroe Clinic, is
there? Yeah, there's the Monroe Clinic. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a clinic, and the hospital both have outpatient physical therapy clinics or centers, and any of the PTs in that group should be able to help you. And Mary Lee, the other thing that they'll also assess is your mid-back, upper back, and neck flexibility. Sometimes when we have a history like this at the shoulder, we lose some range of motion that you're just not going to get back. And so if they can, if there's any stiffness in the mid-back or upper back and they can help teach you how to loosen that up, it'll take pressure off your shoulder. So with everyday activities, you don't nail that rotator cuff at the end of the range of motion. So they'll be looking at your flexibility, or should be looking at your flexibility in your trunk and neck area as well.
Yeah, I've got some C-spine issues and arthritis there.
Yeah, so that would be important for them to work on. Along with the shoulder to help you in the long term.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, Assistant Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW-Madison. Our guest today, I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about how to deal with those aches and pains and sprains and strains. But I also wanted to take just a minute to thank you if you contributed during our fall membership drive. More than 9,000 people pledged, and we're really pleased to welcome 2,100 new members to Wisconsin Public Radio. You donated $980,000 to fund Wisconsin Public Radio and the programs that you depend on. So, big thank you to everyone who pledged, and in particular, everyone who pledged during this hour and a half time period when Judith and I are holding for court. We really appreciate it. So now we're back to business and dealing with your aches and pains. And Deb in Racine has been waiting a bit here, so let's go to her. Hi, Deb.
Hi, how are you doing, Larry?
Great. Thanks for calling. What's the ache you've got?
Well, I've got knee problems. Years ago, it turns out I totally blew out my ACL, and by the time they found out about it, all that it was cleared up. So I have no ACL in my right knee. Okay. The left knee, I've probably been compensating for years, and now the kneecap is just all over the place. I walk, and all of a sudden, there'll be a sharp pain, and it'll slide one way or the other, or I'll have to work it back in. And I really had to slow down walking because sometimes it's like jello in there, and then sometimes it walks and it's just really fine, especially when I'm walking the big dogs and they're pulling.
Yeah.
Is that an exercise thing or?
Well, absolutely. You have an ACL, what we call an ACL deficient knee on the right side. And then, so you're probably right that you're overcompensating or using your left leg a little bit more. And it sounds like you could have some, a little bit of irritation on the underside of your kneecap that's causing that catch every once in a while. You would benefit from physical therapy for both knees, Deb. Having an ACL deficient knee, you're a little bit more prone to some instability or looseness there. So you want to make sure your muscles are working really, really well on that side. And then having a little bit of pain in that left knee under your kneecap, you could definitely benefit from physical therapy there as well. A good physical therapist would give you some strengthening exercises for your quadriceps. And especially with females, we know that we need really strong hips. So there are particular muscles in the hips that can help cause our pelvis to be a little bit more stable. And ultimately, that kind of decreases the load on our knees. So I would definitely suggest seeing a PT. Take whatever shoes that you wear when you walk with you. And they need to do a good biomechanical evaluation really from the ground up, don't you think, Bill?
Absolutely. Yep. If you only focus on the kneecap, you may recover from a little bit of a flare-up, but your chances of it coming back again are much increased. So looking at your foot and ankle mechanics up through the hip and trunk along with the kneecap area is really important.
There you go.
Yep.
Good luck. Thank you for calling, Deb. Rita in Middleton, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry, Bill, and Jill. I have to tell you, I was driving to Chicago, and I pulled over into a rest area hoping I would get on the show.
I'm sitting in a
rest area looking at some beautiful trees, but my problem, I'm 61 years old. I'm a registered nurse for 35 years now. I was recently diagnosed with idiopathic peripheral neuropathy. I have pain, burning, you name it, in both of my feet. I've been on gabapentin, and they've increased my dosage. I'm on 1,600 milligrams a day. It makes me sleepy. I don't like being on medication.
Sure.
And wondered, the worst thing now that I'm experiencing is severe pinching in one of my toes. And I do have a prescription recently from my doctor for an orthotic consultation. Just wondered if physical therapy would help this at all. Do you see people with this?
Hmm.
Rita, it sounds like this new pain, this pinching, it's different than your neuropathy pain. Is that correct?
It is. You know, I get the feeling like always that I'm, you know, like walking on rolled up socks in my socks, and you know, the pain. I feel like the pain and the burning and all of that stuff, I could deal with. I hate it, but it's the pinching where you know, I'm a walker too. I can't even go for walks the way I used to.
Okay. Yeah, I think, and that's where the orthotics may be really helpful to you with the altered sensation and the pain. I'm sure you're standing and walking differently than you normally, and so that stresses the bones and joints and tendons differently. And so orthotics may be very good for supporting the natural arches of your foot, and in footwear, you know, besides your orthotic, you know, good shoes that match your feet as well as possible should help a lot.
Okay.
And then, you know, sometimes I think there are no magic exercises for neuropathic pain per se, but balance, working on proprioception and balance. So a balance exercise program would be important for you. You know, standing on one leg with your eyes open, when that gets easy, you stand on one leg with your eyes closed. When that gets easy, meaning you can maintain that for a good 15, 20, 30 seconds, then you stand on a pillow, one leg with your eyes open, and kind of progress like that. And there may be marked differences from one leg versus the other. But just to try to, you know, kind of force those reflexes to work and charge them as well as you can. But I didn't get the orthotics. In terms of the pinching, you've got to get rid of that. And so orthotics and footwear probably should go a long way towards that.
Right.
So PT wouldn't be worthwhile to make an appointment?
I think it would be worth to have your balance assessed in particular. You know, now that you have altered sensation in there, the feedback to your brain about knowing where your feet are in space is a little bit different. So I think seeing a physical therapist to focus primarily almost on preventative, like a risk of fall, would be great for you to make sure that your balance is adequate. So I would say one or two visits would probably be good.
Yeah, and Rita, the timing, you can make a case for seeing a PT before and after the orthotics.
Mm-hmm.
If you see the PT before, there may be some, you know, local stretching around the foot and ankle or calf to do, or a little bit of strengthening that may alter how the orthotic is designed. And then once you get the orthotic, again, your body's going to adjust to that. And then there might be a little different exercise program. So it might not hurt to even have one visit before the orthotics are generated and just see if there's anything that really you should work on for maybe a month or so before you get the orthotic fit for you.
Okay. Good. Thank you so much for your help.
Yeah. Thanks, Rita, for calling. We had a kind of a follow-up on the C-section question of earlier, a comment from Julie in Beaver Dam, who says, I highly recommend yoga for women wishing to improve their core strength postpartum. I have had 2 children via C-section, and after both, I recovered quickly by doing simple yoga exercises for 45 minutes 3 times a week. For women unfamiliar with yoga, I recommend taking a beginner's class to get started and avoid unnecessary injury resulting from poor technique.
Right. And that's a great strategy, and that's a nice thing that a postpartum mom with a new infant at home can do. And I certainly agree with her. I think that's a great strategy. But once again, before they even take the yoga, they want to make sure that they're recruiting the right muscles when they do the poses. So it'd still be worth seeing a physical therapist for a couple times to make sure that they're recruiting those muscles right. And then I think doing a yoga program at home is a great strategy. It's hard to find time as a new mom to exercise.
Yeah.
Believe me, it's hard to find time as an old mom to exercise.
Okay. I can believe that. Candy in Hubbard, Illinois, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, for taking my call. I am actually on my way to my physical therapist right now.
Oh, good for you.
Our first consultation. I was recently diagnosed with degenerative scoliosis. And I'm just wondering what kind of questions I should ask, what kind of things I should expect, and just kind of how I should compare notes.
This is a great time to talk before you start the visit. They'll take a detailed history. If you're having symptoms, whether the back symptoms or arm or leg symptoms, they'll need a detailed history from you in terms of what makes them worse, what makes them better, what positions are comfortable for you, what activities are difficult for you. And then they'll also look at anything else in your health history besides a scoliosis that may impact an exercise program for you. And then they'll check. They'll look at your posture, range of motion. They'll have you move, what movements are easy, what movements are difficult or painful. And then they should come up with a home program for you in terms of both flexibility and strength. And it's not just necessarily specific exercises, but they'll tie the flexibility and strength deficits to your daily activities. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully also give you some clues of things maybe to modify with your day-to-day activities to take some stress off your back. And you should be able to, they should be finishing the visit with you, giving you a good detailed explanation of what they found and the plan, what role they may have, and your role as well.
Right, and they should really, okay. really try and match those exercises, as Bill said, to kind of your goals. So it's really going to be a personalized program, you know, depending on what your goals are, your needs are, where you see problems in your activities of daily living. So it should be really customized to you.
Okay. I mean, I've done physical therapy before. I've been through it before. This is a little different because it's a new diagnosis and it's a little scary.
Sure.
Having this new diagnosis, knowing that there isn't much of a good outlook for the diagnosis that I've been given.
Well, make sure you articulate that to the therapist, what your concerns are and what your worries are. And it's a fair question to ask, what can PT offer? You know, if surgery's not an option for you or there's no magical medication for this, then what are the expectations in terms of what physical therapy can do for you at this point in time? So make sure you mention that when you start the visit.
Mm-hmm. And good luck.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Candy, for calling. We have Sandy and Shell Lake up next. Hi, Sandy.
Yes. Hello, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm sitting in the car right now, so I hope you can hear me okay.
Yep.
I have taken statin drugs for cholesterol for probably 25 or more years, and I remember 18 years ago telling my doctor that I had trouble going up steps. I'm 64 right now. I had trouble going up steps, and he didn't seem to think there was any significant problem with that. And over the years, I've had trouble even walking up hills that are not real steep. And within the past few years, I also had arm weakness. About 3 months ago, I got pain in my lower legs and ankles so bad that I could not sleep at night, and I decided after looking on the internet to stop taking the statin drugs, and I don't know if that's the cause or not, but do you think my muscles will ever be able to be strengthened back to where they should be?
First of all, Sandy, does your physician know that you discontinued your statins?
Yes, I went in a few weeks after, and he said, we'll determine what we're going to do next time you come in.
Okay,
like in about 2 months.
Okay, so you're off your statins, but you're still being monitored, and your physician's aware of that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Because that's one thing is we always are concerned if a patient stops their medication, we want to make sure that their physician knows and they're aware of that.
Okay.
So I'm really glad that you let him know that. I'm going to kind of turf this one to Bill. My patient population is 18 to 22 year olds, so I don't see that many folks on statins. I've had a couple people anecdotally say that they feel there's an association between muscle weakness and their statins, but I'm going to defer to Bill on this.
What do you think, Bill?
Yeah, there's some in the literature that there's a percentage of the people taking statins who do develop muscle weakness or inflammation, a myositis. And it usually is at the large muscle groups around the hips and pelvis and up across the shoulders. So people have trouble with stairs. People have trouble walking uphill, just what you described, or carrying and holding things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and oftentimes it starts either when people first get on the medication or the dose is increased. And so you've been off for a few months now, correct?
Probably 2.5 months.
Okay. Have you noticed a difference in strength or a return of strength at all?
Not really too much. No, I've been trying to exercise, doing the elliptical and treadmill, but I can only go about 2 miles before I'm just really exhausted.
Okay. All right. Well, those are good things to do and to start with. You can get a return of strength, but the fact that you've been on these for years probably means if you're going to get return, it'll happen more slowly. I've had people where their statin dose was increased. The weakness comes on fairly sudden. They go to a lower dose or get off the medication. Strength comes back fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. But core strength is really important for you, so including the shoulder girdle and the hip area. And Sandy, if you haven't, it might be a good time to see a physical therapist who can do muscle strength testing on you and see which muscle groups need to be targeted. The activities you described are good general activities and good for your heart and lungs, but not necessarily strengthening specific muscle groups that may be weaker than others, and easily set you up on a home program and teach you how to progress those as well. So, again, I echo what Jill said. I'm glad you mentioned this to your physician that you stopped or wanted to stop. And, you know, and it's a fair question to ask your physician in terms of what has been their experience about strength coming back when people go off the medication.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thanks.
Okay, you know, I think my physician doesn't really put much credence in the association with statin drugs and muscle weakness.
Okay. Well, sometimes it's a trade-off. You know, people are on those medications for a reason, and there's always kind of a risk-benefit ratio.
Right.
But the fact that you're having difficulty with the things you mentioned, just walking uphill and with stairs, then I'm assuming your physician would, if they don't think it's a statins, would examine you and make sure there's nothing else going on that would be causing this weakness. Something is systemic in nature or something related to another medication that they would work with you and help you find the reason for the weakness if they felt it wasn't the statins. So I think that's something that you can also push a little bit when you go in for that visit.
Yeah. Maybe even a different statin. Would a different statin make any difference?
Well, sometimes dose seems to make a big difference. That's right. Or if there's some other way to work on your cholesterol besides the statins,
right.
Again, could be. And I'm assuming that's where your discussion is going to end up with this physician.
Yeah. Thanks, Sandy, and good luck. Nancy and Madison, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I have bursitis in my left hip, and I have had it a few months now. My chiropractor, at least that's what he's saying it is, he's worked on it. I am a pretty good walker, and I'm unable to do a lot of that. I've done yoga for quite a few years, and I don't know if that's making it worse. It seems to be making it worse, warrior poses and that, and I don't know what I should be doing to help it or if I shouldn't be doing something.
Right. So
or what I can do for it.
Right, exactly. Well, it sounds to me like you would benefit from having a physical therapist do a good biomechanical evaluation on you.
Okay.
Because the first question is always, well, if you only get it in one hip, why is that? So it'd be good to see, you know, you said you're a walker. It'd be good to look at your shoes and actually see how you walk.
Okay.
The other thing we need to pay attention to, believe it or not, is where you walk. If you're walking on a flat surface versus a slightly banked road, that can certainly play a role. So having somebody assess you, not only walking, but discuss where you walk is a great strategy. The other thing is, although we always think that hip pain is truly coming from the hip, sometimes it can be coming from your lower back. So I think having a physical therapist look at you and make sure that that's not your lower back referring to your hip would also be a good thing.
I do have severe degenerative disc disease, and I am bone on bone on two spots in my lower back.
So that's a key thing in your history, Nancy, that I think it would be very helpful to, because of that, I think it'd be very helpful to see a physical therapist because you're a little complicated. So seeing a PT, seeing exactly where the pain generator is, where your source of symptoms is coming from would be great. And then going through your whole exercise routine and saying, this is a good thing for you to do. This we should avoid for a little bit. And making sure that gets you in a good stretching and strengthening program, I think would be great.
And good luck. Thank you for calling.
Thank
you. Yeah, I was going to just, when Nancy mentioned, you know, the warrior pose causes more pain, you know, it's a general rule when we're exercising, pain we don't want to work through is pain that sharp, stabbing, burning pain that moves into an arm or leg. That's not the kind of pain that you want to work through because generally you'll make yourself worse. Sometimes with a bursitis, if it truly is a bursitis, people are worse after the activity. Mm-hmm. They're okay during the activity, and then they pay a big price. And, you know, I think we're familiar with what's a reasonable amount of soreness after you start something new or increase intensity. And so if it's more than that, then your body is telling us, you know, something needs to change or we need to modify our workout.
Right.
And Nancy, again, thanks. Rose in Blanchardville, hi.
Hi. You know, I just heard someone talking about the statins, and I was on statins at one point, and then my son was also on statins, and he ended up in a wheelchair, so I thought, well, I better get off of mine. So I faxed my doctor, and I told him I'm going off of the statins. Well, he called me in the morning, 7 o'clock, and said, well, what we're going to have to do is get a blood test. And I said, fine. So we got a blood test, and what I did go on was red yeast rice with CoQ10. And that's what I'm on today, and he says I'm doing great. So I think it's something that people have to think about. CoQ10 is very important if you're on any kind of statin.
Yeah, well, and Rose, what you described as working with your physician is key. You know, just keeping them informed of what you're concerned about and what you'd like to do, and then working out an alternative plan was perfect way to resolve it. And, you know, because you can reach a point of muscle weakness where you're not going to get a return. And so the sooner you address those things, the better.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We had an email from John. It says, after working in the yard most of the day, I'll be resting in my chair during the evening. Seemingly out of nowhere come excruciating cramps in hamstrings, inner thighs, toes, and ankles. Ooh, it sounds awful.
Yeah.
I've learned to rehydrate every hour by drinking water or zero-calorie energy drinks. Rehydration helps but does not solve the problem. Anything I should do to prevent the occurrence of cramping besides hydrating?
Well, it sounds to me like, you know, it's after a day of using those muscles kind of in the same position over and over and over, and then we sit, and it sounds like he's just getting a lot of cramping in those muscles. My suggestion would be he needs to take some breaks throughout his yard work day and do some stretching in between. I think the hydration concept is great. He needs to make sure he keeps those muscles adequately hydrated.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think doing some good stretching in between all of his bouts of yard work would be a great strategy for John.
Yeah, I'm not sure how active John is in general. I mean, we do yard work comes in bunches, bursts at certain times of the year. But again, good physical activity, whether it's a walking program or combined with a biking program, better prepares us for dealing with Mom Nature as we work through the seasons here.
Yeah, I always tell patients who come in who've done a bunch of yard work and are sore, I say, would you ever go out and run a marathon without training? And they say, oh, heavens, no. But realistically, if you haven't trained those muscles and you go out and you do a day of yard work, it's really no different.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we think about it that way, but it's really a big bolus of exercise, repeated muscle contractions that our body is not used to doing or may have not done since the last time it snowed or the
last fall.
Right, exactly.
What about people who run 10Ks without any exercise,
exactly.
Any planning?
We're not going to talk about anybody, are we, Larry?
With lots of hills. And
who doesn't go see his doctor,
Larry? Oh, boy. Carla and Ashland, we'll get to you in just a second. I want to remind you, we're talking today with Bill Boisenall and Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum. Bill, associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Jill is an assistant professor in the Department of Physical Therapy, Doctor of Physical Therapy Program, at UW-Madison. She's a staff physical therapist as well for UW Athletics and Badger Sports Medicine. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your physical health, how are your aches and pains and sprains and strains? Larry Mueller here with Bill Boisenault and Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And we'd certainly love to hear from you. And we have open lines so we can get you on pretty quickly with a phone call. Again, 1-800-642-1234. Carla in Ashland, it's your turn. Carla, thank you for waiting.
Well, thank you for your time. I'm calling. I have developed over about the past 4 months pain and kind of hard mass on the tibial tuberosity under the right knee and to a lesser extent on the left knee. And I have no history of osteoarthritis, but it's all started about 4 months postpartum.
And is it painful, Carla?
It is. And if I run, it's painful. If I do a lot of walking, it's painful. It hurts to kneel down. Biking doesn't seem to flare it up.
Okay. And it's pain, like, when you touch the tibial tuberosity. And first of all, let me say I'm impressed you know what that is.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
So
it's when you touch it.
Okay.
Where is that?
Where is your tibial tuberosity is the bump that's right below your kneecap on your tibial bone.
Oh, it's, okay. And I know right where that is.
Yeah, and that's where your big quadriceps muscle comes in and attaches in your patellar tendon. So hurting when you kneel, it hurts when you run. It sounds to me like I'm wondering if you have a little bit of patellar tendonitis right at that insertion. What do you think, Bill?
Yeah, you mentioned Oshkosh Slaughter. That happens in adolescence. There's
right.
a growth plate there, and so that can get irritated. And Carla described the symptoms almost perfectly, kneeling on it and things like running and stairs. And so obviously that's not what you have. So what would be the next most logical thing? And I agree, you know, something with the patellar tendon, you know, whether it's an itis or a little bit of tendinopathy or – but the fact it's 4 months, if time by itself was going to take care of it, you should be better by now.
Well, and the other thing is she had a baby 4 months ago. So here we're looking at the whole, you know, she's got a baby. And is the question is her running mechanics changed because she's weak in your core?
Right.
So is this pain that's manifesting in your knees really coming from the fact that you've altered your running mechanics because you had a baby 4 months ago? So I think having a physical therapist evaluate you, look at your running mechanics, and look at the strength of your core would be very, very helpful. So the pain in your knee may actually be coming from core weakness.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, all right. Good luck.
Good
Thank
luck.
You. Appreciate your call. And Bill in Green Bay, hello to you.
Hi there. How are you?
Great. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Two questions. I had a knee scope last May, and it just didn't never really healed very well. I ended up having to get a cortisone shot in it, and then it was still getting hot every day and swelling up, and then did the three sets of, I'm not sure what they are, but you do it 3 weeks in a row. I forget the name of them.
Oh, probably hyaluronic acid injections?
Yes.
Synvisc or something like that, yep.
Yeah, so those definitely cooled it down, and, you know, the pain is only there if I really work on it hard now, but there's definitely a lot of, when I move the knee back and forth, like almost like a lot of crunching in there now. And I don't know if, I just don't really know what that crunching noise is. Is it scar tissue that may be developed? I had a plica taken out and they cleaned it up. So I'm just wondering what that noise is.
So when you had your knee arthroscopy in May, that's what they did? They took out your plica?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, you know, when you take out a plica, that's an irritation on the underside of your synovium, which is like the sac of fluid that your knee sits in. So
It
sounds to me like you have some kind of chronic low-grade synovitis going on in your knee. You've had some cortisone injections. You've had the Synvisc injections. Can I ask how old you are? You sound very young.
I'm 37.
You're very young. You're very, very young to have all this going on with your knee. Did you have any sort of trauma to start this whole cascade?
Not that one. I did on, I had my other knee. I had a major fall on my other knee like 3 years prior.
Okay.
This knee was just like chronic pain. It was always nagging me and stuff like that.
Okay. Is the crunching that you hear or can feel in your knee, is it painful?
It's not really painful, no.
Okay. You just have a lot of crepitus. Did you have any formal rehabilitation once you had your knee arthroscopy in May? Like, did you go to a physical therapy? Okay.
Yeah.
Are you still seeing a physical therapist?
I'm not anymore. What happened was it just seemed like everything I did kept making, I was kept getting these huge blood spots on the inside of my knee and stuff like that. It just, almost like it just kept bleeding, and they said, well, that's the blood working to the surface. It's probably from prior and stuff like that. It's just working to the surface. But it happened like three times where I kept getting blood all of a sudden on, you know, showing on my skin, like almost like it kept bleeding.
Okay. Well, I think it sounds to me like now your knee has settled down a little bit. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, it is.
I think now is probably a good time to revisit physical therapy. I think what may have happened is you had such an irritation in there, it may have been too much too soon. Now that it sounds like your knee is kind of holding its own and a little bit in a kind of a happier place, I would definitely advocate for getting some good strengthening so you can unload that knee a little bit more. So strengthening the muscles around the knee, the hip, and even the foot would be a great strategy for you. The other thing that's going to be important for you is shoe wear. To absorb shock. If you have kind of an arthritic knee, you want to be able to absorb shock anywhere else along the chain you can. And one of the big places we can do that is through footwear.
Yeah, the minute I walk on uneven grass or anything right. like that, that it just makes it really sore.
Really bad.
So a physical therapist can make a good recommendation on shoe wear for you as well. So it's probably time to revisit it and see where things go.
Good luck, Bill.
Can I ask one more question?
Okay.
In my back, about the same time something happened, I don't know if I lifted something. I kind of remember something popped, and it's behind my right shoulder blade. It was probably for like 4 months. Every couple hours, my hand was going numb. And I still, like within a couple hours of waking up, I get a knot in the back of my, in the right back shoulder blade. So it's almost... And I was getting, it was real, actually making me a little bit dizzy, and I was getting a numb hand and stuff like that. A lot of that is resolved from the physical therapy, but twice when I was getting the physical therapy, I was pushing my shoulder up, and they were pushing in that area, which relieves it. But twice my shoulder kind of popped, and now I'm getting kind of like I always kind of get a burning feeling in my shoulder blade, and it doesn't take much for that knot to come back.
Okay. Bill, are you doing any postural exercises for the shoulder and neck area?
You know, I do, and then that either makes one or the other worse. I feel it in my shoulder if I kind of work the band and do strengthening in my shoulder. That makes it warm and burning kind of feeling and sore.
Okay.
And then, I've done a couple things that I'm trying to strengthen my back, but I get that knot, and it's pretty much there for, once I get it, if it happens at 10, I have it, but it goes away by the next day when I really, don't work it during the night.
Okay.
So something, I heard earlier you saying something with the shoulder and that kind of back are related, so.
Yes. Yeah, the mid-back and upper back, if you're not doing any stretching for the rib cage and the mid part of your back, I don't know if you have a foam roller or you have a tennis ball that you could lie on and roll on to kind of self-mobilize that area, not up at the neck, but between the shoulder blades and right below the shoulder blades. And when you're rolling on a tennis ball like that, you're looking for spots that hurt good. It's a tough area to get at flexibility-wise, and it's different than strengthening, but it's a way to loosen that area up, which changes your posture and can help muscles work a little more effectively and efficiently.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much, Bill, for calling. Appreciate it. And Mona in Appleton next with a question. Hi, Mona.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just, I've been waking up, it started about a week ago, with my upper back and my neck are just... When I first wake up, it hurts, and it hurts into my chest, right in the middle of my chest. Like it goes straight through. I think it's the position I'm sleeping in. Mm-hmm. It started with the night when my neighbor was being real noisy, and I went and slept on the sofa, which probably didn't help. But now it's like I almost have to sleep on the sofa, or it's worse. I think it's the position I'm in. I'm wondering if there's a bed you recommend, type bed, or the air mattress is really good, or memory foam better?
That's a great question. I don't know that there's a specific mattress that you can recommend across the board for anyone. I think what's probably more important is that your sleeping position that you're in, to make sure that you're well supported. So kind of as a general rule, Mona, a good position to sleep in is on your side with a pillow between your knees and a pillow under your neck that kind of keeps your neck in a neutral position. If it's too flat, you kind of side bend one way, and if it's too fluffy, it kind of kinks your neck the other way. So I don't know that it's the mattress as much as making sure that you're sleeping in a really good position. And side lying happens to be one of the better positions to sleep in.
I do usually sleep. That's the only way I can sleep is on my side.
That's great.
I sleep kind of curled up. In fact, I messed up my elbow by sleeping with my armband too tight. And it finally just got used to it because I couldn't break it. I just couldn't break the habit.
Right.
So
sleeping on your side is good.
We love our mattress.
Do you?
Yeah, we really made such a difference in my wife's back.
Really?
I've heard the air mattresses are good. But.
Well, we have a Tempur-Pedic.
Mm-hmm.
They're expensive. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. But Man, it sure it made the world of difference for
how
my
wife. How long
have
you had yours? You're a chomper, right? Because my friend had one, and she... Sorry,
3 years, maybe.
Oh, because she said she had hers only for a year or two, and it was just junk, and she didn't like it.
Well, I wonder if it was a Tempur-Pedic.
I think that's what she said, but like you said, I'm sure it's different for everybody. Yeah. That's what I think I'd like is the memory foam. But
right.
Well, you know, the advantage of an air mattress is you can adjust it. Mm-hmm. You can make it as firm or soft as you want.
Absolutely.
And that's what you don't have with lots of mattresses. And it is difficult. It's like a pair of shoes. You know, what fits me well may not fit you well. And so you want one probably to err on the side of being a little more firm than too soft. If it's too firm, too hard, which can cause some shoulder discomfort or hip discomfort, you can always buy a good mattress pad then to soften it a bit. But the memory foam seems to work for quite a few people. But I think Jill's probably right. It sounds like it's probably more your pillow based on where you describe your symptoms as opposed to the mattress
itself.
Well,
I have one of those wavy pillows. I don't know what you call them, but I have one of those, and I try that in different positions. I even tried putting it the long way to kind of just have to get my neck as level.
Yes.
So it's not up or down too high in my head.
Right. That's great.
But I have scoliosis too, so I don't know how bad it is, but I've just been told to have it. My spine is.
You know, one of the things that I went out and bought was one of those body pillows. And I really like that. Just I always, when I sleep on my side, I always find that pillow between my knees ends up on the floor. I can't find it. And I sleep with a body pillow, so I always, it's really easy to find. And I have that pillow between my knees, and then I have something to rest my top arm on, and that seems to work well for me.
Yeah.
So that might be something to suggest before you go out and buy a new mattress.
Good luck, Mona. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with Bill Boisenault and Jill Tynissenbaum.
That's okay. My mom does it all the time.
Jill Tynissenbaum, our other guests, and they're with us right up until 12:30 today. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Nothing can ruin fun activities more than a sore back or maybe painful muscles. And once a month, we are fortunate to have folks with us who know a lot about staying in good shape and getting back in shape after an injury. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Jill Tynissenbaum, assistant professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. One of our guests today. Always a pleasure, Jill.
Oh, it's always great to be here.
And Bill Boisenault, who is an associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Bill, great to have you back as well.
Thank you. Good to be here as always.
Well, we have lots of callers online. The number, by the way, is 1-800-642-1234. But every line's filled for the moment. Let's turn to Willie in Chippewa Falls, see what's on Willie's mind. Hi.
Hi. I have fingers on my hand that stick. And one of them is the middle finger on the right hand, and it that one really hurts. And sometimes I have to actually pry it back open.
So it kind of locks up on you.
Yeah, there's the ring finger and the middle finger on the left hand, they stick, but they don't hurt. But the one on the right hand is
okay.
It really hurts.
Yeah. Joe, what do you think?
There's a couple things. It could be Dupuytren's contractures, where you actually get some contractures in kind of the fascia and the in your hand. And it sounds kind of like that, Willie, primarily because you mentioned it was your ring and middle finger. This would be something that I would recommend you see a physician for, to see you can have surgery on this to get it fixed. So this would be something I'd probably encourage you to see a physician for, to see if they can fix this.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Not uncommon.
Yep. Not uncommon. Okay. Thanks, Willie, for calling. Mark and Racine. Hello to you.
Hello. I got a couple of questions.
Okay.
The first is that, I'm 60. In my 60s, and my stomach is no longer flat. Part of this, I think, is curvature of the spine has increased above the my hips. The other is, I think, that the girdling muscles that go around the abdomen, muscles and ligaments, have become more slack. I was wondering if there's anything I can do about that.
Well, definitely as we age, we do see that we lose the elasticity in our muscles and our tendons. I always tell people that when you're young, your muscles are like that nice fresh rubber band. And as we age, they become very similar to the rubber band that we have wrapped around the newspapers up in our attic that have been there a number of years. So they definitely do lose their elasticity. With regards to strengthening, there's certainly some good strengthening exercises you can do within your core. We talked about it a little bit earlier today. There's deep muscles within your core area that you want to recruit first. You don't just want to do a lot of sit-ups or something like that. Otherwise, what you're going to end up with is a big muscle imbalance. So this is somebody probably, Bill, I'd probably encourage to see a physical therapist.
Yeah, I would too. I guess, Mark, there's the idea is a strong cylinder. It's not just the abdominals. It's muscles on the sides and you and the back as well as the hips. And there's just a wide range of exercise intensity. So making sure you start at the right level so you're actually working the muscles that you want to work to support your back and help the stomach area. Okay. I agree with Jill. You don't want to be doing full sit-ups. Sometimes that can actually make the stomach issue worse.
Yeah.
And, by core, it's working on the trunk and the hips or the trunk and the shoulder girdle area combined or in combination. So this sounds like it's a good time to start for you, and you don't need lots of visits to get a good program started, and the therapist can help instruct you or educate you how to progress it yourself as well. But it sounds like a good time to go in and see somebody for this.
Right. You're not having really any pain with it, and so let's do some prevention. I think it's a great strategy. Good
there,
for you.
There you go, Mark. Thank you for calling. And Nick in Madison, on to you. Hi, Nick.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You bet. What's on your mind?
My girlfriend she's only 25, and she's had 5 knee surgeries in total. She's torn her ACL or PCL, you name it. She's around the gambit of it on 3 on one knee and 2 on the other. She's exceptionally active, and we both used to be very active doing, lifting or running. And after these knee surgeries, 3 occurred in basketball. She used to play quite a bit of that. And then the last 2 are kind of freak. She's had kind of an overarching fear of getting back into it, getting back into, running, lifting, all of that. And I was curious, is there a way to kind of alleviate, I guess, this? Like, I mean, she really wants to get back into it, but she's just, that little, voice in the back of her head is telling her that she's going to hurt herself.
Absolutely. Again. If she's hurt these knees 5 times, it's probably not a little voice. It's probably a screaming voice. So, no, she has very extensive history on both of her knees for being somebody so young. But, for somebody like her, she's a perfect candidate to see a physical therapist, and I would recommend seeing somebody with a good sports medicine background. She needs, the higher level rehab that's very sport specific, where they actually take all those components you have when you play sports and they break it down. And I have biological fear is really important in sports.
Man, I would if Lori were here, Lori would say, "Is she in the pool ever?"
Yeah, exactly.
Or
exactly.
Go in the pool.
Yeah, as a place to start.
It's a great place to start. Yeah,
that she could probably start anytime. Catherine in Madison, hi.
Hi, I'm delighted to have gotten on. So this question's in a little bit of a different tone, because I'm just wondering how typical it is, or what the story is on as you get older and you're trying to maintain your strength, which I've been doing for a long time, but I just find that my next day fatigue and malaise, it just keeps getting worse. And it's not like I keep pushing the limits, I've actually backed down a little bit, but I'm just wondering if that's just to be expected, or if that's the type 1, type 2 muscles.
Well, what are you doing?
I'm doing a really well-rounded, professionally led strengthening
program
3 times a week, usually when I get there, which is most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing this for years. It varies, from time to time, but it covers just about everything. It's very well rounded, but it's not like you're kind of completely doing the exact same thing every time. So you do get that variability. So I guess I'm just wondering what's going on.
Yeah, so Kathleen, it's a good question. Can you describe the fatigue and malaise? Are you talking about muscles that
it's
are weak and sore?
Really, it doesn't. Sometimes, you know, occasionally I'll get sore here and there, but it actually takes a lot to get my muscles sore now.
Right.
So it's what you would have without the soreness. It's just kind of, it's like you're coming down with the flu. I mean, I personally, my amateur diagnosis is that it's overactive inflammatory cytokines, but. I don't know why that's happening. Because
right, exactly. And the fact you've been doing this program for a while.
Yeah, like literally year. I've lost track, but, you know, 6 or 7 years.
So, okay.
And this is in the past. I don't know. It's been sort of happening gradually, but it's just really become more and more acute in the last 6 months to a year.
And you've had a good physical exam?
Well, what would I be looking for? I mean, I don't know what to ask for.
Well,
a
I think
physical exam today. You don't just walk in and say, "Hey, I need a good physical exam." You have to be pretty specific.
No, but I think Catherine, if you describe what you just described to us, and I think the physician will know whether it's blood tests to run, and that sounds like that's what you need really is a good physical exam. And
I mean, I'm in very good health, other than some arthritis.
Right.
And
right.
I have. Like done all the major, you know, the usual gamut of organ, organ screening tests. And
good.
Right. But but what you describe is unusual.
It is.
For
not something I should just grin and bear.
No, I would not. And, you know, that if you feel like you're coming down with the flu and the malaise, if you describe those things, the physician will know what to do. And
I'm dubious, but I'll
well, I understand if there's some skepticism, but again, I'm really glad you called. And the fact that this has become more acute in the last 6 months suggests whatever's in there is changing. It could be something diet. It could be related to a medication or a supplement.
But
okay,
I'm to us. I the people.
Right. And I think, you know, and again, if that's what part of what you present to the physician, along with all the supplements that you're taking, I mean, it's like you'll be able to provide a really good detailed history. But you describe the flu-like
sensation.
Well,
you know, don't get me wrong. When I say flu-like, I don't mean I'm getting a fever.
Yes. No, I understand.
I feel like I want to go back to bed.
Right.
Yeah.
You need to get that checked.
Yeah.
Definitely need to get that checked. Good luck. Thank you, Catherine, for calling. And don't wait, you know. Call around today. See if you can make an appointment.
Exactly.
Well, and like Jill said, you don't want it to reach the point where all of a sudden she can't exercise anymore.
Right.
That's pretty. It would be a significant lifestyle change. It may not need to be made at all.
Right.
So.
And she's obviously very healthy. If the only thing she takes is hormone replacement therapy and some supplements, she's got a lot going for her. So we don't want to slow her down.
Right. A Facebook question from Kristen, who said, "I recently developed a buzzing sensation in the ball of my left foot. This is something to be concerned about. The sensation comes and goes. First noticed it when I was standing and it felt like the floor was vibrating. It also occurs when I'm off my feet. There's no pain, just this kind of buzzing sensation."
Wow. I don't know that I've ever...
I wonder if that's tingling.
Well, that's what you always wonder, if it's tingling. Right. If it's a tingling type sensation in the ball of her foot, I always think about it. There, you can get little neuromas there where you get some nerve pinches in between the bones and the ball of your foot. Happens a lot to people who do Stairmaster on their toes. And it can be because your toe box on your shoe is not wide enough and you're kind of pinching your toes together. So if buzzing means... tingling, that's kind of the first thought that comes to mind for me.
Yeah, I would too. Either something local in the foot or new footwear, tying shoes too tight, or, you know, on a rare occasion it can be coming from the back, but then many times it's in both feet. She says recent, so if it's only been a few days, I guess I would just be careful with footwear. And if it doesn't get better though within a week or two, then go in and see your physician.
Right.
Arlene in Superior started running for the first time this year and has enjoyed doing it outdoors. But with the weather changing, sounds like my wife here, I need to think about running on a treadmill instead. We were actually looking at treadmills last night. Anything I should keep in mind to make sure that I'm getting the same benefits of the workout?
Well, that's a great question. As winter is looming, and I guess in Superior it's probably looming sooner than it is down here, people are starting to take their exercise indoors. Running on a treadmill is completely fine and good. I definitely would encourage you to make sure that it's a good treadmill that has a nice forgiving surface. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also nice to vary the incline just a little bit. Typically when you run outside, you run up and down hills a little bit. And so you should do the same thing with your treadmill. Take it at zero incline and maybe go up to 3 or 4% and vary that just like you would to make it to kind of mirror, mimic what you do when you're outside running.
Mm-hmm. And the springs, I think there were like four. We were looking at one that had like four springs on each side.
Yep.
And man, that was comfortable.
Yeah, right.
It makes a big difference.
Makes a huge difference. Yeah. It almost is. You get what you pay for when it comes to treadmills.
Yeah. Chris in Sturgeon Bay. Hi. Thank you for calling. Chris, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a problem with my shoulder when I was about 16. It was dislocated.
Okay.
And at the time, I just leaned up against the wall and pushed it back in. And so now I'm in my 40s. And every time I seen the physician beforehand, I had told him about the shoulder. He says, well, does your arm still move? Does it work? Like, yeah, well, there's nothing we can do about it. He said. Well, now I have developed muscle memory. It doesn't pop out anymore. Through the years, it used to, but then it would go back. So then I went and seen a physical therapist, and she had said that I have frozen shoulder.
Yuck.
And it really hurts. Even if I go through the drive-thru, I can't turn my wrist all the way and extend my arm just to receive my change.
Right, right. Is your shoulder, I know it's obviously very stiff and you can't move it. Is it also very painful?
Yes, when I raise it to the position of going, I can't even reach the other side of the back of my head on the right side.
Right. Do you have difficulty like tucking your shirt in and getting the wallet out of your back pocket? Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, it does sound like you have what we call a frozen shoulder. And basically what happens is your shoulder joint is in a balloon of fluid. And that balloon actually has some folds like an accordion on the bottom side. And when we raise our arm overhead, those folds of the accordion have to open up. What happens when we get a frozen shoulder is that those folds in the accordion basically adhese or stick to themselves. And the whole balloon gets tight and sticky. Unfortunately, what we know about this is that the course to recovery is very, very long and very, very slow. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. The good news is you will get better. The bad news is it's going to take some time. It can take, I hate to say this, up to 12 or 18 months before you make a full recovery. Most people encourage you to maintain the range of motion that you have. In other words, don't push through the pain.
Right. That's what she said.
Right.
It hurts every time, so I don't know.
So you need to do your exercises and activities below that point of pain. So if you raise your arm up and you get to the ow spot, back off a little bit and stay below the point of pain. So you keep the motion that you have, but you don't keep re-irritating your shoulder. Yeah, it'll take a long time, but you will make a recovery. But the things that you're, you know, describing, you can't get your hand in your back pocket, you can't, you know, scratch your head, can't tuck your shirt in. All those things are very classic, what we see with a patient with a frozen shoulder.
Yeah. There you go. Good luck. Thank you for calling. And Jeff in Green Bay, hello to you.
Hello.
Hi, Jeff. What can we do for you?
Yes, I have a fatigue in my left hand. I'm a right-handed person, in where I describe my funny bone. And it gets fatigued very easy, and after working with my arms, it will actually start burning, especially if I touch it. And I'm just wondering if that's something that I'm in my mid-50s that I have to learn to expect.
Oh, no, let's not. No, you don't want to do that.
No, you're still a young pup yet, Jeff. the fatigue, so how long has this been going on?
It has been going on for about a year, on and off. I don't really worry about it too much, but when I especially lift, and not necessarily very heavy, it just seems to to be a little more sensitive, and at night it's fatigued, and then, like I say, when I do touch it, it can give me a burning sensation that's a piercing pain.
Well, what you're describing sounds nerve-like, and there are nerves around the elbow, the funny bone area that can cause some of this, but also possibly your neck. Are you having any symptoms like this in your right arm or hand?
Not at all. Okay. Not at all. Just my left hand, and I am right-handed, and I'm quite physical with my right hand. I'm a builder.
Okay.
And I do a lot of lifting, a lot of pounding, and that's why I was surprised that my left hand had the problem and not my right.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, Jeff, since it's been going on off and on for a year, and what you're describing sounds nerve-like between the, you know, the burning and the fatigue, I'd go in and get an examination, and they should be looking at your elbow, hand area, but also all the way up to your neck, and see if they can find out where this is coming from, because that will make a difference of what treatment program they suggest for you. It'd be very different if it was your neck versus your elbow and hand. And the other thing, it could also be vascular, so they should check for pulses, you know, blood flow, as well as doing a nerve screen to sort out what's causing this. You know, if it's only been a couple of weeks, so we can maybe say it was work-related, that'd be one thing, but you know, a year, I'd go in and start with your physician and have them examine you and see if they can kind of figure out where this is coming from.
There you go. Good luck. And Bill in Prairie du Chien, you have a quick question.
Hi, good morning. I was wondering if you've ever heard of anybody having a negative experience with these rebounders, these mini trampolines.
Yeah. What specifically were they doing with them, or how were they using it?
Well, actually, I was using it, and I developed a pretty serious lower back problem. And I went to I had a bunch of chiropractic treatments, but they didn't do anything. And they took an X-ray, and they said my pelvis was a little bit tilted to the right. And I had an ankle problem, so unfortunately, I decided to try the trampoline with my knees, and it seemed like that's what caused the problem.
So you were so you're bouncing on it on your knees?
Yeah.
So it's possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, I use a mini tramp quite a bit during rehab, so it certainly can be some benefits. Bouncing on the knees is a little less natural than bouncing on your feet, so it would depend on the posture of your back. So the answer to your question is, could this have caused your back problem? It is possible. But in terms of what was damaged, I don't think I'd be able to sort out on the phone here, Bill. I guess if you've been to chiropractors and it's not helping, I would try some other type of care for someone who can evaluate, you know, your back and through your legs and see come up with the reason of where the pain is coming from and then what kind of rehab program to put you on.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Bill. Wow. Well, lots of questions answered
we
here.
We did. Good questions. Really? Good comments from people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, you guys. You'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
Absolutely.
We will. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you so much. We our guest today, Jill Tye-Nissenbaum, assistant professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, and she is also a staff physical therapist for UW Athletics and Badger Sports Medicine. Bill Boisenault, associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He's a senior physical therapist at the UW Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at the hospitals and clinics at UW. Great to have them. They'll be back. We'll do it again. For our Milwaukee area listeners, we want to make sure that you know that Joy Cardine and Kathleen Dunn are broadcasting live from downtown Milwaukee on Wednesday. So stop by the Pabst Theater anytime between 6 and 11 to experience the radio broadcast in person. Should be a lot of fun. And tomorrow, Phil Pelletieri, our insect guy, stops by. Thanks for listening. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.